Okay, thank you, Jason. So one of the first questions you might ask is, why is a guy that was president of Padlock Ranch talking about managing risk on medium to small size operations? And I'll just share with you that prior to coming to Padlock, I was involved in my family operation, was there 18 years. I ran anywhere from 300 to 700 head of cattle. Today, I am counseling with families and managing a ranch that has anywhere my clients have had as few as 50 to about 1,400 head of cattle. I'm working with six different ranches and actually now managing one of them. So I do have some experience in all sizes of operations. And many of the things that we do for risk management apply all the way through. And you'll see as we go through, I'm going to say that about nearly all the stuff that you've heard has something to do with risk management in some way or another. This is kind of an unusual slide to start out with here, but Susan, I've done a lot of work with interns, and Susan was an intern of mine about 12 years ago, and she was from Germany, and she is now ranching in Australia. And I do a lot of stuff on Facebook, and she put this on one time, and I have used it a number of times in talks now just because, what in the heck is she doing? But she enjoys life and enjoys being in the cattle business. Some of our risks that we've all heard about during this conference is start with weather and other acts of nature, our domestic and export markets, the succession and management issues, pressure from society, and of course our profit and risk. Nature deals us some blows once in a while. It could be in the form of snow, it could be drought, it could be fire. And depending on where you are, some of those may have a higher priority than others. But one of the ones that we all deal with is drought. It's a huge risk. And it's one that can affect our business about as fast as anything, or faster than most. As we plan, a whole lot of our risk can be changed by the makeup of our enterprises, by developing critical dates, also by having good management now. If we're taking care of our grass and we're capturing all of the water possible, drought will be slower to affect us, and it will be faster in recovery if we have a good root system for all of our plants. So if we have a good system in place that helps us with our grazing, we'll be in much stronger position. And you suppose this calf would have liked for us to do a little water planning beforehand? I was on a situation, this calf was in a situation that many of those calves had not ever seen or had a drink of water. So it was so dry and everything had dried up and there was not adequate water. So we really need to be thinking of those kind of things as we develop our systems, because drought will come. And with our enterprises, yesterday we heard some talk about stockers and so forth, and it's certainly one that can help our situation be a little more flexible. One of the things that I like to do, and it will depend on your area, and it's different on the various ranches that I'm working with now, but critical dates are important. In much of Wyoming, a lot of our moisture comes in May, or April, May, and June. If you look at the weather data in your area, you can determine what the 40-year historical averages have been, and you can determine where your critical date needs to be. But in a lot of Wyoming, the middle of May is one of those times when it's really critical. And as we look at the weather forecast that we've heard about and may or may not get moisture in the spring, it's going to be critical for us to be able to make a decision. So in the case of my example, we had May 15th as a date. At that point in time, we can determine whether or not we can keep feeders on the ranch. It may determine how many heifers we keep. The real reason that I like to have those options is I've been in situations, and I'm sure many of you have too, if you're fully stocked with cows and you need to move some in May or June, that's the problem. You may be in the act of calving, or you may have just calved, so finding some place to go with those cows is pretty tough. And you don't want to have to sell them then, but that may be what you have to do. With feeder cattle, you may not like the price, but when they go down the road, they are down the road. As your time goes on in June, you can get rid of some cows, your cull cows or dry cows. Maybe you've had a practice of keeping those over, so you have opportunities to reduce numbers. Early weaning certainly is an option for reducing numbers in time of drought. Dre and I were talking yesterday. There's some of the folks that feel like early weaning is hard on the calf or is maybe not even humane. But if you've ever weaned early, at least it's been my experience that many times those early weaned calves wean better than the fat 600-pound calf, and they're more healthy. So I would like to put the extra weight on, but if I need to, I can certainly get rid of them. And then in October and September, October, November, you have opportunities to move bred cows to get your numbers down. Another area that we'll talk about, and I won't talk very much on price itself. There are all kinds of ways, and you can use futures and options and puts and so forth that are going to do it, but that's really for another presentation and for somebody that knows what he's talking about. But when I say size matters, it matters for all of us because it makes no difference how big the operation is. In the big scheme of things, we're pretty small. In other words, in the big picture with the cattle industry, any operation is fairly small. So anything we can do that helps us associate with other people, work with co-ops, for example, or alliances, those kind of things begin to help you in a marketplace which will bring more size. Relationships, reputation, alliances, forward contracting, and futures markets are really important. These relationships, when you need to move or need to change things, it's really critical that your banker knows what's going on. And I put seed stock supplier, but he really, in that instance, I'm talking about all your suppliers. Do they know what's going on with your ranch and what you need to do? Maybe they know of things that can occur. Your networks can help you find pasture, for example, and so forth. Relationships with buyers. I've had the fortune to have really good relationships with some buyers, and when times are tough and you need to move cattle early, if you have a good relationship, that can happen. And then, of course, neighbors know what's going on. You'll see I put pictures in every once in a while, and I've worked with Jason quite a while, too. He said he worked with me, and I know that he needs pictures once in a while to keep his attention, so I've done this for Jason. Our reputations are really critical. Do we meet and exceed what others expect of us as we do business and as we work with our employees and those around us? Our cattle reputation, their genetic potential, our past performance records. We've heard the last speaker talk about records and various ways of keeping them. If you go through the trade show, you'll see that there are programs that are out there that will help you sell your cattle. It will help you provide a niche that people will know what your cattle are doing and are really willing to work with you. One of the things we've also heard about here is kind of a big picture item, but relationships with people on our domestic markets are really critical. Some of the things that our consumers are talking about are how we handle cattle and hormone use in sickness in cattle are the top three concerns. And they also are concerned about how cattle are raised. And the reason I'm putting this up is that we were challenged to reach out, to use social media and so forth. And we all have some responsibility in that it will help us market our cattle and help us reduce risk. Some of these things that can come through these stories with antibiotics and so forth will hurt us all. And we need to help manage that risk. Some of the surveys, like this one that the Checkoff did, are showing that there are some downward shifts in how people feel about how cattle are raised. And it's just so simple. And that's not simple. How you get the message out is not simple. But people are so far removed from production agriculture that they have no idea. A number of years ago, we had some fourth graders out at the ranch, and they were looking at some calves that were being born and were on grass, new calves. And the startling thing was not the oohs and ahs that was coming from the kids. The startling thing is that when the teacher from Sheridan, Wyoming, got ready to get back on the bus, one of her comments was, "I can't believe you got calves on grass. I thought they were all in feedlots." This is a lady from Sheridan, Wyoming. And she, to me, was startling because if you're in a small town, you drive a long ways to go shopping and do other things. And so I'm sure she did. And so you drive past all these ranches, but she had no idea calves were born anywhere except in a feedlot. Alliances can help us with risk protection. One of the big things that I think it helps here is that if you're involved in an alliance or a marketing program, you know where your cattle are going, so you can work to optimize whatever your program is to meet that situation. There are a number of them out there. There are many more than these, but I've been involved in the Country Natural Beef Program, and it is one of the ones that I got in it for risk protection because the price was established a year ahead of time. The members do that. There's many other programs with different types of programs like basis pricing on your calves and so forth. And it's a good way to help minimize risk. The other thing is exports are really critical. They're somewhere between $280 to $350 a year, depending on what's going on. It's decreased a little bit now because of the basically the value of the dollar has made it tougher to do exports. But anything we can do to help improve that situation. One of the things that they're all asking for is traceability. Many of us are doing this anyway, but we may not be recording it in some manner. So just little things can help us on an international situation. Business risk, like I said, in the last year I've worked with places from 50 head to about 1,400 head. It's amazing that sometimes there is not a budget. There is no plan for finances and where things are going. And so you might ask, well, why would someone with 50 head ask you to come help them? It had nothing to do with the cows. It had to do that the family wasn't getting along. So there's various risks, and I'll talk about that, not that instance, but the fact that we have got to work on those things. Marketing plans. I'm really big on trying to get people to talk about what their plans are within their organization and the why that we heard talked about with millennials and others. It's really critical for us to know why we're doing what we're doing. And lots of times it will be really amazing how many good ideas are out there. And even as you're working on that and thinking through it, I'm working with two places right now. Today we're working on budgets. And I'm working with them, with the guys. Basically what I was hired to do on both of these situations was to mentor the manager and trying to make him successful. And so we're working on budgets, and what I'm trying to get accomplished is to tell him that budget is basically the minutes of whatever the business meeting was. And so they're kind of learning that. Trey learned this when Trey was working with me. I'd come to a meeting like this and have lots of questions. I'd have time to send questions out. That's what I've been doing the last couple of days. I'm working with these budgets and figuring out what it's costing for hay and so forth that they've never sat down and done before. So having these written plans and discussing them is important. Rickle Plants, a friend of mine from Powell, Wyoming, has a background with Microsoft and then started ranching. And in a talk he gave for the NCBA, he talked about the fact that by revenue, a 500-head cow operation is in the top 30% of all U.S. businesses. And however many of you ever think about that, you know that you're in the top 30% of all businesses in the United States. And are you operating as such? So you're not some small entity out there. You're really important to our country and you're right up there with many of the big companies. As we look at this, we must understand what our business is doing. We need to know what our cost of production is, what our fixed and variable costs are, implications of decisions we make, both short-term and long-term, and are we profitable and what our trends are. This question may not seem like risk management, but it is, in that maybe your situation would be better served if you leased cows from someone. You wouldn't have that risk. Maybe you're just starting out. And I'll bet you today you could find somebody that owns heifers that are going to calve this spring that they were planning on selling that they may be looking for a partner for because there's a lot of heifers available. So there's opportunities that might come available that would really reduce your risk. The other risk that's out there is the one of succession in families. I have done some work with some families, and this family in Wyoming I haven't done work with, but they're good friends of mine. But this picture just shows the various ages involved in that and how they're going to work together to get keep the farm in business and keep that family together is really critical. Communications is one that sometimes we take for granted and say that, we heard that various generations last night talked about, and it's easy to be in a top-down approach and always tell people what they're going to do. And many times we need to sit down and involve them and explain the whys, and that's really true in a family situation. There's a short-term, I call it, maybe sometimes isn't short-term, but there's what happens if you have a foreman or manager working for you and they leave. You have some risk there. What have you done to make sure that there's others within your organization that are qualified to take over? And the long-term risk is with succession. We many of these things have been talked about today, and I'll just want you to think of them, though, in terms of risk. And if we have some clear objectives, and all of the team, all of the family members, and that may be two of you, but if you understand where you're going and why, you'll have a much better chance of being successful in the future. Families are working now to make sure that they have some divisions of responsibility. I'm sure you've either experienced or all have known of folks that have never done this, and so there's not a clear division of who's going to do what and who makes the decisions and how you make sure that that rotates some if you need to. If you have a father-son or father-daughter situation, maybe areas of marketing, for example, could be rotated for a few years so that learning can take place. Standard operating procedures really bothered me for a while when I started thinking about this and working on it. But what I found is that particularly these places that you might have some turnover, or if something happens to the leader, if there are some basics about what you do and why you do them, and if they've been thought out, it's much smoother and you can go on much easier. Your financial trends are important to understand and for the whole group to understand. Lastly, one of the things that I advocate doing is having an advisory board, no matter how big your operation is. An advisory board can help you. One, you're not good at everything. So if you can have people around you that have different experiences, whether it's from a financial point of view, nutrition, or whatever, they can add to your operation. And I'm not talking necessarily paying anybody anything here. My first advisory boards were with no pay involved. I ask, my local county agent, some of my suppliers and so forth. Even at that point, I had a BLM permit, and I asked the BLM to come in and sit on that advisory board. It really helped in our understanding with what my needs were. My suppliers understood what my options were with my feed and so forth, and they were in a different seat than if they were just coming out to sell me something. And the same thing with the BLM. They began to understand that I had particular needs that needed to be met in order for my operation to go on. And there's never 100% situation here where your BLM person, if you have public lands, is going to work with you. But a lot of times something like that will. So it also is a really good chance. Many of you have families that have off-farm families that own part of the business. And if you will take a little bit of time and do at least once a year, have a somewhat formal meeting where you talk about the business and what's going on, it really will keep them connected to the ranch, and it will bring more harmony within the operation. They'll understand why you're doing what you're doing. That was the last point. This was on Facebook a while back. I think that we are in a wonderful business. We're really blessed to have participated in it, or I am really blessed to participate in it and working with all the families that I'm working with now. We have to continue to remember that we have many of the answers to the world's problems, whether it's feeding the world or hiding carbon, putting carbon in the soil and so forth. And these are the guys that are getting it done for us. I've really been blessed. God has blessed me with a wonderful wife that's been putting up with me for 46 years. And so thank you so much.